So just for your planning, we are going to end around 10 o'clock. I have basically three questions I would like to put to each of you, each one of the questions. And then we open up to the floor. There are so many people dealing even professionally with image making that they should have the chance to participate, to engage in this dialogue. My first question to the three of you would be, and that has also is a kind of observation of the last, let's say, 10, 20 years, that images in presentation played more and more an important role. So my question to you would be, could you imagine to give a kind of similar presentation without showing any image, number one? And the, so to say, the complementary question would be, could you imagine a presentation not speaking at all, only presenting images?
Whoever wants to start. John?
Well, silent cinema would be very entertaining as an evening. And I think that's a great thought. I'm finding that when I teach, I rely more and more on images to convey things, and basically the content of my lectures is commentary on the images, and students are certainly ready to hear by seeing. So I could certainly imagine just deleting the text and leaving the images.
Does this reflect, so to say, the situation that we are more and more surrounded by images, or what is the reason that images play such a...
I think so. I think students spend a lot more time flipping through pictures than they do flipping through books, written books, that is. So that's not something that was really talked about, I think, by any of us, just the way in which our literacy is so much more a visual literacy and what that means for how we communicate and what we communicate.
You imagine just to show images?
Yes, I could not only imagine it, I've done it. And in that case, my focus would be on the image as metaphor, as the image that arises in language. And I think we actually had a demonstration, precisely that, in an interlude in John's talk, when he had us close our eyes and simply be enchanted by his voice. I wanted to ask him at that point whether he had ever read Jesuit Meditations, because, of course, this is straight out of Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, the guided meditation which he took us through. So I think images are mental. They are effects of consciousness. I think they probably go beyond the human into that machines are starting to dream. And machines have these images now which we cannot see. The image, this was something I left out of the conclusion of my talk, which is the images that one machine shows to another machine to impress on them something like a circuit diagram, which then etches itself in silicon. These are like the medieval images that were not for us. You know, they were hidden away in the rafters of a cathedral. But it was important to know they were there. And so I think, yes, and the first essay I ever wrote on the theory of images, What is an Image?, has no pictures in it. So I think it's completely possible. I think it'd be much harder to do the reverse, but it would be fun to try.
Hito?
Yeah, I also did both.
Pardon me?
I did both. I mean, talks without images and... Okay.
But could you imagine to do the same presentation?
Yes, absolutely. It would be very easy. It would also be fun. I would put on a sleep mask and say, this is cutting edge VR. And now I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing. There is this image floating from afar. And I might be a Leonardo da Vinci, but I'm not really sure. And I will do this for, I don't know, 40 minutes. It will be... perfect VR, very cheap.
Great. Second question, also to all of you. There was this Uber accident in the United States, the car accident, because there was no driver in the car. And today in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, there was this image showing you the car where there is no driving wheel. And to me, I mean, this was really shocking to some extent, seeing the car without driving wheel. So meaning basically that the whole process of driving is mediated by algorithm images, image taking and image producing and controlling the whole process of driving. And to some extent, I think all what you were saying about the third stage and Hito and John were talking about was that all, the whole world we are in is basically mediated by these images. So my question in this context is, what about reality construction on the basis of this kind of permanent mediation by images where you don't know who is behind it, where there may be machines behind it, maybe there are other human powers behind it, because all these processes are mediated. And forensic architecture tries to develop in this kind of image-driven world, to some extent, to take a position which is normally not possible because basically you navigate through images. How is it possible to take a position which allows you to construct a reality which makes somebody justifiable in court?
Well, I mean, first
what,
you need
what
is
a conceptual strange? The conceptual take on that, sorry.
I think, first of all, you would need a court, right? I mean, that's more important almost than the evidence, because this is what I always, what always comes to my mind. What about all the images which are probably evidence of something which do nothing? And that's the very vast majority, because there is no court, there is no enforcement, there is no political structure to deal with whatever images are trying to say. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I'm not really sure whether what we ended up talking about, you know, which are basically data, are images. I mean, they can be rendered as images, some of them, many of them, but are these still images, or what is it? Maybe it's something else. I think probably it's something else, right? But what is it? That doesn't seem clear to me. I mean, keeping on believing that these would be images mainly seems to me not to really take into account these momentous changes, right, which you have described over maybe the past 40 or maybe 100 years, doesn't really matter, maybe since the beginning of photography. But maybe this is also a huge wave and the momentum which has run its course and is now in on the verge of being transformed into something else which is not mainly visual anymore.
Would you agree on that?
I want to hear more. Transformed into what? You're suggesting there's something,
well,
that images will disappear and there'll be something?
No. The main, I don't know, it's not even a material substrate, is impulses of electricity or some kind of tension being stored somewhere, right? Is this visual? Is this still visual? It can be rendered as visual. We need these kind of translational processes, and humans have to depend more and more on machines that are performing these translation services for them. But is this not already a realm which goes beyond the image, was still lagging, you know?
Well, and possibly this art show or this MA that you described of the chaotic order, which I can imagine, that's a way of trying to render that logic or that way of seeing, which isn't visual, which isn't in images, which is how the robot sees, how an algorithm sees. That's a way of translating that into a visual form that we can grasp. I don't think humans are going to lose the visual, are going to lose the image.
No.
But I think that's absolutely the challenge, is to figure out ways of either through words or through images, making what that driverless car sees somehow visible to us.
Yeah, but I mean, what the driverless car sees is not probably even the main component of what it does, right? It's just one element.
Yeah, to some extent, it's even beyond. He is not relevant at all. In this case, he is not relevant.
So it's sort of a Persian question of translating signs from one into another. And I think we can still speak of signs without necessarily saying these are images. And pulses are signs. The sensing that the driverless car does is indexical in some way. And we're going to convert that. I think we want to convert that into images because we live through images. We see and understand through images. But also interrupting that chain of translations of media produces interesting things too.
Maybe that it's just because a human being is involved in this process of being in the car that we speak of images in this context. Otherwise, it may be just mechanical or electricity produced events.
Measurements, I guess. No? These are measurements and relations.
I would add a couple of observations to this. One is, for me, images are not necessarily visual, either in what they refer to or in the way they are experienced. It seems to me that sound images are real things. They are likenesses and impressions, forms in the acoustic sphere that we recognize as either similar or different, consonant, resonant, dissonant. To me, the image transcends sight. It's not necessarily visual, which is why we have to say things like, I mean visual images, and that instantly suggests there are non-visual ones as well. The other is more focused on the question of what vision is in the first place. And I would here go back to Descartes' Optics and remind us that Descartes explicitly refuted the idea that there's an image formed in your eye on the retina. He dissected the eye of a cow and said, yes, with a dead eye, you get an image on the back of the eye. But with a living eye, no image is formed because the light is dancing on nerve endings. And that's what led him to say, vision is like a blind man with two sticks. It's really, we see through our hands. And of course, we know that the sticks of a blind man are not just to feel whether the ground is smooth or rough, but to create a sound, which we then interpret as a space. So to me, the reification of the visual is an important temptation to avoid when we're talking about images, and to let the image move across sensory registers.
Just to your driverless car, I think it's less shocking to think about a driverless subway, a driverless train. I think if you're back in the sixth car, and you don't really worry about who's in front. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that's shocking about it is the replacement of a machine, or the placement of a machine in a setting which for us is so connected to our individuality. The sense of who you are, I mean, that's what Land Rover's playing on, is connected to your car. And if you put a machine there, somehow that relation disappears. But when you use public transport, you're kind of happy not to feel like a self-directed individual. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a contrast of very simple technologies that make it so that between buses and cars, or monorails and cars, that make the car more shocking.
And we have a model for this in everyday life. When designers of driverless cars say, what we have to convince people of is to trust the machine the way they trust an elevator. And of course, a lot of us, when we get on an elevator, we still don't trust it. That's why everybody goes silent and looks at each other and refuses to talk or make eye contact. But it'll be a different way of seeing as and feeling as when we learn to accept driverless cars. But there's going to be lots of accidents first, I think.
Yeah. My third question is around the issue of where is the point of critique, or what does critique mean in this context? When I was a young boy in the 60s, 70s of the last century, I was preferring to use to eat industrialized produced apples because they looked just more beautiful than the apple in the garden. So the image of the apple was the industrial produced one for me, which was desirable. Today, it seems to some extent that it's reversed, because we are surrounded by so many artificially produced images that to go indigenous, to go nature, seems to be one solution, or to go analog, seems to be one solution to escape this whole situation. And of course, if you take this route, it leads you very quickly to a kind of right-wing populism. So it's a very, thin surface you go when you go native in the situation we are in at the moment.
You know, I've seen these tomatoes at the supermarket. There's a new fashion in tomatoes. They are supposed to look somewhat irregular. I think that's the new format, right? That's the new template. Don't look somehow natural.
No, but for example, I take what John said at the end of his talk, saying we should try to get out of the game and should play analog again, meeting other people without taking your iPhone with you, to demediate, so to say, to some extent. Is that really a solution to take a different perspective on the?
No, but and Hito made the point that the move to respond to all of the illusions that we're assaulted by turning to classical narrative cinema or classic documentary cinema or realism of various sorts is contained within the digital bubble of illusion as well, and it's completely predictable. I mean, as you say, it's playing at analog. We can't step out of it. That said, I think there are certain ways of doing that that aren't just reproducing, you know, in the form of critique, the same thing that's being critiqued. And that's going back to the reality of being there. I think VR is designed to make sure you're not actually there. I think if you did set up an art exhibit where you had to spend 15 hours on the floor of an Amazon loading factory, like, people would be forced to empathize and be forced to understand something and maybe do something about it. No. You think they could do it just as pure tourism?
Yes, totally.
Well, maybe you know our audiences better than I do, because 15 minutes in an Amazon warehouse is crushing. I mean, as one knows, as I empathize. Obviously, I'm not saying get back to nature. There's biosphere is just proof. There's no nature to get back to. But I also think that experience is irreducible, and the ground on which rethinking the natural, realizing that it's always made, is going to have to be done.
Yeah, and to come back to the opening of your question, what about critique? What are we doing here?
Yes.
I think, to me, one of the, it isn't a blind alley, but it is an alley that we have been pursuing maybe for too long, and that's the alley of suspicious iconoclastic critique. I think somehow if we just expose the falsity of images, if we show, you know, you are deluded, you are inside of a bubble, and you can't get out. It has, I think, a dangerous effect. It makes us think, well, who is the speaker of that sentence? It has to be somebody who sees through it, sees around it, who is outside that bubble. And I think we're all in it together. That's why I say, I think Nietzsche had the right advice to iconoclastic critique. When he said, take the hammer, philosophize with a hammer, strike the eternal idols, but don't imagine you're going to smash them. Make them resonate. And then, the move which continues, and this is all metaphoric. I can't picture it visually. I can depict it in language. He changes the striking instrument to the tuning fork. And says, strike the idol with a tuning fork. So something happens there which is does not claim to smash the bubble, to get us outside of it, but makes it feel different, that transforms it. And one way to do that, of course, I think, is to move from one image space to another and not to be fixated on a screen, which has become, you know, for children, it's become an addiction, I think. John pointed this out, that it's very important to give children non-screen time because they immediately become absorbed in it and get feedback from it. But it's a dangerous addiction. And so I'm a thorough believer in a variety of image experience, like William James suggested with religion. Jump into the immediate, because there's always going to be a zone of immediacy when whatever bubble you're in is punctured.
Okay. Now I think we take questions from the floor. Can we
bring the
get a
so
bit more light so that we see the audience?
That would be great.
Okay. And where are our mics? Ah, okay. Here are our mics. Who has questions, comments?
Well, I could answer your previous question, Ben.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe.
Go ahead.
So I think, especially in this at this point, where many images only become even perceivable using very heavy machinic translation, I think at this point it's more important to ask about the access, you know, not even to images, but to any kind of information. If you need, I mean, what is this algorithm, you know, who made it, of the driverless car and so on, to insist on translation and mediation, not immediacy, you know, on access to mediation in relation to whether it's images or information or whatever, even food, you know. I mean, in your images, I thought it's a great metaphor for the sharing economy. You don't share the food, you share the photos of the food, right?
Yes.
So it's about having access to food. This is what it should be about.
Questions?
Okay, I have one.
Oh, yeah, please. Mike? Do you need here Mike?
In the pictorial turn or poor image age, maybe whose job is dealing with image making, especially institutions in the context of art? What kind of responsibilities we expect from them? Like if we are in such an image crazy world, if it is the pictorial turn, if it is the poor image age, institutions whose main job, task, responsibility is to deal with image processing, image making, positioning image, reading image, analyzing image. What kind of responsibilities you would prioritize as professionals for art institutions?
I mean, I think one task Hito just described is to develop programs which introduce you into the logics of image making in order to understand the mechanisms which are going on there. And since these mechanisms are really driven by technology, it's, I think, also a task of cultural institutions to deal more and more with technology, which is normally not done. I mean, especially in Germany, maybe different in the United States or in England, but in Germany, the divide between humanities, cultural sciences, and technology is so big that only a few institutions are really trying to explore the logics and the technologies behind image making, which are so important to understand the world we are in. That's
one. Well, and the danger of that is that you'll be promoting technology in connection with thinking about or making images, and then it's a kind of adjunct to the Silicon Valley or Hollywood industrial complex. So yes, we're high tech, and therefore we're creating even better illusions. The real challenge is how to understand those technologies and not just use them to produce new deceptions.
Yeah, if I could take off from where John left off, I think you see the danger that John's referring to in what's now called the digital humanities, in which literary study, which is where I started, is devolving into distant reading, basically letting the machines do the reading for us. And the problem is that often that reading is asking questions that are so simple and reductive that at the end of the day, the results you get back are either simply a confirmation of what you already knew or a reduction in actual understanding of what a literary text might contain. And the associated problem is that because the digital humanities involves equipment, it involves a lot of money. And so I think it's a very dangerous situation when humanities scholars start to apply for grants to apply algorithms to novels because there's money in doing that, as opposed to thinking about the moral, political, social structure of storytelling, of the use of language for lyric and for expression. Well, in that sense, I know I'm going to sound like a good old-fashioned humanist, but I confess I am.
Yeah, but the point is that because the humanities did not develop conceptual means to analyze the logics from a humanities point of view behind these technologies, they just take over the logics of the technologies.
Yeah.
And that is what happens in the field you just described. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is dangerous, but of course, the challenge is quite a different one. Mm-hmm. The challenge is from, you call it humanist perspective or from an intellectual perspective, to try to understand the complexities of what's going on in a broader social, political context these technologies are operating in.
Yeah.
I think this is a challenge. And there, a lot of people in the humanities don't have the conceptual means to do that. Mm-hmm. So when they are attracted by technology, they just take over logic of technology. Mm-hmm.
I think this is why I love to watch science fiction, because there I see the literary fighting back against the kind of romance of technology. So all of you, watch Black Mirror, watch Electric Dreams. This to me is where the humanities fights back by way of narrative and human life.
There's another question over there.
Perhaps if there are 2-3 more questions, we just collect them and then have a final round here. Yes, please.
My name is Matthias Ruf. Thank you very much for this inspiring, deeply inspiring evening and for the lectures. From my perspective, maybe there is a kind of an underline, the energy of connectedness and disconnecting, who is in group, who is out group. And Mr. Mitchell, you end with the spaceship Earth image, and this is also maybe my feeling and my perspective Buckminster Fuller has an idea of a bubble, of a dome. A dome who is in connection, who is working with synchronicity. And I think this is maybe an interesting question, the difference from the bubble, from the Amazon bubble, from the Amazon biosphere.
Did you get the question?
Not really.
This was more a statement or a question?
Yeah.
A comment, okay.
Yeah, comment.
Okay. Is there a final question or statement? Otherwise, we say good night. Good night.